How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 227 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there. You can leave a review, hopefully 5 stars. The reviews really help, so if you want to leave a review and say something nice there, it's always welcome. 5 stars is cool, too. Find us on audioboom.com as well, and log on to normantranscript.com. Check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site right there, normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. And you can see free agency coverage, although that's kind of over now, but still Thunder articles. I got a story on the Thunder defense up there now. I got another one on Epe Udoh, who is from Oklahoma City and just signed with Utah, and like some crazy stories that he had from just dealing with crowds there in Turkey, which I thought was a fun story to write. I am on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, obviously the Friday episode now, but just a reminder, like I said, on Wednesday's episode with Josh Huestis, which you can go back and listen to if you're into the occasional Huestis guests on the pod. I'm going to Tuesday and Thursday starting next week. It's like the dead period for the NBA right now. So I feel like Tuesday and Thursday is still good enough for Locked On Thunder. And today's guest, former video coordinator, former assistant coach, Nets, Grizzlies, still looking for that first summer league win, Steve Jones. Steve, how you doing, man?
I'm good. You snuck that in there on me, but I'm good. I'll get that win one day. It's all right.
you'll get the win. Everyone deserves a summer league win.
Yeah, they sure do. They're not easy to come by. Trust me.
So Steve, the reason that I wanted to have you on was because everyone talks about. People sit around and they wonder, like, how are Russ and Paul George going to play off each other? This is a very different roster. So even though there actually is, I think, a little bit more continuity on this roster than is being played up. There are a decent amount of returning players, but there are consequential guys who are coming in. Obviously, Paul George, just him being around completely changes how this team is going to play. And, Patterson is stepping in as a new starting power forward, presumably, and Felton will be a guy who will be, will at least change the quality of backup point guard. And I wanted to have somebody in who understands the X's and O's better than like any other writer that I could have on, and kind of talk about how Paul George and Russ and all those guys kind of mesh together. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, how do you think amongst like guys, top 20 guys in the league, where does Paul George rank as like a guy whose skill set fits with Russell Westbrook's?
I'd say very highly. And the main thing I think is because you can do so much with Paul George. He's got he's got flexibility. He's got different things that he can do on the court. So it's not just he's a great scorer. You can run him off screens. You can give him dribble handoffs. He can run pick and roll. He can set pick and roll. He can catch and shoot. So it opens up a lot of different things where he can add to the OKC offense without necessarily taking anything away from Russ, if that makes sense. So there's just a lot more action you can add. Obviously, the number one thing everyone wants to point out is, well, Russ gets help, Russ gets help, Russ gets help. That's true. You do get another massive playmaker that defenses have to guard because, credit to OKC for what they did last year, but the threat was and always was Russell Westbrook. What's Russell going to do to create for him or someone else? And now you have to deal with Paul George. And so there's a lot of different actions you can run where Russell maybe starts it, maybe a misdirection into Paul George. Now you got to guard George coming off screens. Then you got to guard Westbrook again. So you can kind of see it's hard for defenses to maybe just lock in on one thing because of so much you can do with both Westbrook and George.
So one of the things that I'm curious about how they're working, and I'm wondering as like a coach, how would you go about this? So last year, early in the season, the Thunder tried some more off-ball movement, some more off-ball screening. I mean, I actually have not seen the screening statistics because Vantage Sports doesn't release those screening statistics like they did a couple mm-hmm. years ago. But I'd be willing to bet that the Thunder were at least near the bottom of the league in just total number of off-ball screens last year. They just did not set a lot of off-ball screens, but it was something they tried to do a little bit more earlier in the year, particularly for Oladipo. They'd set some down screens for him, have him run some curls, and Russ just kind of waved them off to the point that they just kind of stopped doing it. How is that? I mean, obviously, Paul George is a better player than Victor Oladipo, holds a higher stature and is extremely good at running off those curls and shot extremely well. On catch and shoots last year, shot extremely well on running off of screens, all that kind of stuff. But how can they put in a way to where Russell still feels comfortable with those sorts of actions in the offense while he can still kind of do what he likes to do?
Well, the biggest thing I'd say is it's going to be easier for him to trust George coming off those screens. And this isn't a shot at Oladipo or anything like that. But as a coach, you're thinking, you know, if Victor Oladipo comes off this pick and he catches and shoots, we don't want an easy shot, but we'll live with that result. It's going to be a little bit different if Paul George is coming off. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that threat's going to be a little bit more of an impact on the defense. And one of the things I point out, and I'm thinking about this off the top of my head, one of the things that John Wall does very well for the Wizards is he'll call a screen for Bradley Beal. He'll just have someone go set a down screen for Bradley Beal, but then he'll ISO. So he'll just go the other way. So the defense is locked in on Bradley Beal. He attacks the weak side. He gets a layup. That's something you could see from OKC. But back to the question you asked me, the Thunder have been in a tough position offensively because you have this massive talent in Westbrook, right? And he's very good with the ball, and he creates a lot of havoc and transition out of pick and roll. And I think it goes back to a little bit what I think Doc Rivers said the other day. Someone asked him, what's going to be the difference with Chris Paul gone, ball movement? When you have a player like that, it's easy to let them kind of run the show, let them create the offense. You lose some of that ball movement because, let's be honest, if last year Oklahoma City had run just a ton of movement, a bunch of ball screens, the team may have gotten better, but would we have gotten the most out of Westbrook? So it's one of those things that it's tough to balance because in the playoffs, that second unit, those other guys, they needed that structure to have something to get going to get them some easier plays, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so, I wonder, like, I'm sorry, Steve, go on, boy.
No, and so that's kind of where the struggle is because you need to have something that works. And I thought his first year, Billy did a really good job of mixing in a lot of different movement when he had Russ and Durant early on in the season. But if you have great players, you just really got to get them in the right spot. And sometimes you sacrifice some of the movement to get them in the best area to really let them thrive and do some work for you. So the challenge for OKC is just going to be, how do we balance in Paul George, get him a multiple actions because he can do multiple things without losing Westbrook? I don't think that'll be the challenge. The challenge really to me, and this is going off a little bit, what can we do for that second unit? How can we get them something that's going to let them thrive so that when they come in, you don't have to have two different offenses, but you need to have something that's going to give them some easier plays. And you may be able to play Russ and George and let George play with that second unit a little bit to kind of give them a little bit of life.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a question because there are a lot of options for that second unit. I mean, like you just said, you can stagger. You can easily stagger with those two guys. Like that's something that you know, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. Durant was always a little hesitant about staggering. It was something he never really wanted to do. They didn't really do it under Scott Brooks. They started doing it under Billy Donovan that final year with Durant and Russ together. And staggering usually tends to work. I'm curious to see if they're going to stagger Paul George and Russell Westbrook, if that's something Donovan will want to do. He kind of made an effort to do that with Russ and Oladipo last year. Obviously, this would be a completely different level, especially because Paul George would command, you know, handling the ball in the second unit when Oladipo pretty much deferred to Samaje Christen during the second unit a lot of last year. So that would change the dynamic. But I wonder, even if they don't stagger, then do you let Felton run the second unit? Do you put the ball in Kanter's hands more and let him run it out of the post, which is what they did for like a pretty decent stretch of last year? So there are a lot of options that they potentially have. I'm not quite sure what the best one is. I'm sure, like, depending on the opponent, you know, there are different things that you could do. But obviously, that's a hard thing to change during the regular season. You know, that's kind of more thing that you cater during a playoff series. Okay, we're going to do this a little bit differently during a playoff series and during the regular season. You kind of concentrate on what's best for you. But they actually have second unit. I mean, last year everyone has options. But last year they weren't the greatest options. Like, have this 32% shooter run your second unit is not the greatest option in the world for an NBA team. But this year they have some decent options for the second unit. It's going to be super interesting to see which way they go.
It is. And the one thing I look at the roster is they have versatility. I think you wrote about it when you talked about them maybe adapting a defensive identity in a sort because they have that versatility defensively. It's going to be really interesting because they have a lot of length. And obviously, Steven Adams has been good protecting the paint, and they play hard. So it's going to be interesting to see how that fits in because it's weird because you see this summer, I think Utah said it once Hayward left, we're going to build around Rudy Gobert. We're going to be about defense. And OKC maybe leaning a little bit about what we can do defensively when defenses didn't have the best time last year. You know what I mean? So it's hard to be a niche defensive team in this day and age in the NBA, but if you can get after it, it does give you an advantage.
Yeah, I kind of like the way the defense has gone in the NBA. I mean, I realize that offense was up around the league last year, but like stylistically, I think, and this is obviously just a completely personal thing. There's no right, there's no wrong in this. But like stylistically, I find the most fun defenses to watch. I love those like long, athletic, switchy defenses. And if you look at the top teams, the directions that they're going in this offseason, it's like OKC just has these. Even the guys who aren't yet, I mean, like Jeremy Grant is probably not yet an impact defender. He has the tools to become one. And I think the Thunder strongly believe that he will become one because they have a lot of faith in their internal development. And Grant is a smart dude and he's got a really good work ethic. So I think they see no reason why that he's 23 years old. They see no reason why that won't happen. And he improved last year throughout the season. So I think they're excited about that. But he's not there. But even like guys like Grant, where he's just a tremendous athlete, crazy long, has potential to be at the very least a shot blocker, and at the very most someone who can protect the rim a little bit while also being able to switch onto wings on the perimeter because he's quick and he's long and he's just a tremendous athlete. And they've got Patterson who's switchy, and then you look at these other top teams out there that are kind of trying to do the same thing. I mean, in Boston, they're going to play Crowder. They're going to be able to play Crowder at the four. They're going to be able to play Morris at the four. You know, those are similar types of defenders just stylistically. You know, you look at Houston, who might be able to play a lineup where they have like, you know, Bamute and PJ Tucker and Trevor Ariza and Harden and Chris Paul all out there at once in certain situations. Like it's, I think that's going to be fun. Like defensively, those sorts of lineups to me are just when they have this sort of controlled chaos, I just find that extraordinarily fun to be able to watch those teams communicate out there. And when you can pull it off, I just think it's a beautiful form of defense against that when you can just like see beautiful defense against beautiful offense.
No, yeah, I hear you there. And we saw it at a high level in the playoffs. The biggest thing is, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if Grant and Patterson can evolve into those switchy fours, because if they can go ahead and switch, that's going to give the Thunder that dynamic defensively where they have the length, they have the athleticism, they can keep people in front. The toughest part for most teams is switching always sounds like a great idea until you do it and you don't have the guy that can keep the guy in front. You know what I mean? So your four-man, you want to switch, you stay out of rotation, everything's fine. All of a sudden, your four-man can't keep the ball in front. Now you're giving up penetration, you got to suck in, and it's a whole bunch of problems. And so if you have these small lineups that can do it, you have an edge over the other teams. But if you get yourself in a position where, okay, we want to switch, we can't switch, now we got to show, that changes your defense a little bit. And so one of the things I'd say is, if OKC is able to switch, and if that's the route they want to go, obviously we'll all see, that's going to help them, because one of the things Houston did is they just had Roberson's man screen and they switched to get him off Harden, right? Mm-hmm. If I recall correctly, they did that, which lessens his impact because, you know, he is a defensive specialist, a very great defensive player. And so if you've got these guys who can also do it and switch, now Roberson's still going to be a problem and your defense is still going to be fine, right?
Yeah, I also think what an interesting part of it is like the Thunder, like against Houston, for example, when they're switching, like they were switching 1-4 with Adams on the floor. I mean, mm-hmm. There were times where Adams switched, but those were in desperation reasons, not schematic reasons. I think that what's interesting about that is that so much of it is going to have to do with communication. And Steven Adams is one of the better communicating centers in the league in terms of calling out coverages early, understanding that kind of stuff. And I wonder if the difference when Adams – I mean, the difference between Adams and Canner out there defensively with, like, the on-off numbers and stuff have always been extremely obvious, whether you're watching with the eye test, whether you're looking at the numbers, whatever it is. I wonder if the if you're going to be able to play Canner amongst those sorts of defensive lineups, because Canner, amongst his, you know, foot speed issues on defense and all that kind of stuff, just doesn't really talk that much. And it's something he's gotten better at. But when you're playing that sort of stuff, like, not only do you need somebody there as a final line of defense in case, you know, Jeremy Grant is playing the four and gets switched out onto a wing, or Patrick Patterson gets switched out onto a wing or a guard, and then that guy, you know, ends up penetrating by him. Like, you need that last line of defense, obviously. But you also, when you're playing that, like, you need pristine communication. That's part of what's really hard about playing that sort of aggressive defensive style. And, I mean, I could see them struggling even more than usual with Canner out there because of that. That will be an interesting subplot to this year too, because they have other options at bigs. Like, they like Jeremy Grant, and I feel like Adams is going to have a good year. And they've talked about, you know, McDermott playing more four than he has in past years. And these are all, you know, options which could end up, you know, cutting into Canner's playing time a little bit, I think. How do you feel about that?
Well, the biggest thing is, if I remember in the Houston series, Canner's biggest issue is he was just stuck in the mud in the paint. So obviously he was trying to contain, but he wasn't helping up at the top. He wasn't protecting the rim. Guys were either blowing by him or going right into him for fouls. And so the biggest issue, and I think a lot of the league did this last year, they kept their bigs back in the paint. And some of the best defensive bigs can handle that because they know exactly how to kind of mess with the ball handler and protect the roll. But in Canner's case, he was kind of in what we like to call no man's land, where he wasn't up on the ball handler, wasn't affecting, you know, the dribble drive off the pick, and he wasn't with his man rolling. So it either forced help or gave a straight line drive. And the thing that he's going to have to figure out is, can they find a pick and roll coverage that he can execute well? That is basically what it comes down to. You can hide a big if they can do one or two things very well. If you can just stay in the paint, protect the rim, you can be effective. If you can be up and active, you can be effective. But if you're not doing any of those things, you find yourself in a tough position that puts a lot of pressure on your defense, to your point.
Yeah, I mean, what year was it with Charlotte? Was it 2015 or 14 when Charlotte had that nice year under Steve Clifford? And Al Jefferson was kind of like, he was never a great defensive player, obviously. But Al Jefferson kind of had his best defensive season that year under Clifford. They were like fifth or sixth in defensive efficiency or something like that. And part of it was because Steve Clifford, because of the coverages and Al Jefferson, like Canner, was never someone where it was like, he doesn't care. He doesn't try. He just flat out was never good at it for physical and, you know, coverage reasons and that kind of stuff. It wasn't because it was just an issue of like, he never, ever, ever tries no matter what. So he kind of turned Al Jefferson into this passable defender. And one of like Steve Clifford's greatest accomplishments to me over the last, like, you know, however many years he's been in Charlotte now, 4 or 5 years, is that he turned that team, a team with Al Jefferson as a defensive anchor. Granted, you know, he still had guys like MKG and that, like, there are good defenders on that team, but a team where Al Jefferson was your defensive anchor, like, he turned him into at least a defensive center who is not going to kill your defense. And so it's possible. And Al Jefferson kind of reverted after that season. And maybe Canner is worse than Al Jefferson was. You could speak to that better than I could. But, like, I feel like that's an example of, like, turning. And you only need to do this within bench units, right? But I feel like that's an example. Like, this kind of stuff has happened for singular seasons before with the right type of coaching and the right type of schemes.
But to your point, that's a great example, because Big Al is Big Al. But in that situation, he only had to do one or two things because they had such good defenders out there on the wing. He had to be in position. And he was right there for the guard. Everyone protected him. He got back to his man. It was simple. And so the more simple you can make it for a big, the easier it's going to be. You know, if you give them, hey, this is what you're doing every time, everyone else is going to help you, better things usually happen. What happens, and the issue with teams is when their bigs get in the middle, in between, aren't sure what they're supposed to do, it messes everything up. You talked about communication earlier. All of a sudden, there's less communication. There's not as much help. You know, the point guards maybe trying to do something different because they're getting hurt because, you know, the big's not there. So all sorts of different things can happen. If you're not solid at your first level, it puts a lot of pressure on your defense. I'm sure you want to talk about defense this much, right?
I love talking about defense. Who cares? I mean, the listeners might want Paul George talk, but I love talking about defense. I think talking about defense is fun. I enjoy defensive X's nose more than offensive ones. I have no idea why, but I very much do. Probably because a terrible defensive player gets on my nerves more than a terrible offensive player.
That makes sense because, yeah, you can always hide a terrible offensive player. You can put them in a different position. But, you know, it's tough not to see Oklahoma City not doing better offensively, you know, with that threat that Paul George provides. And I'm just really curious to see how much action they can run with him, how that's going to help them balance their offense out. But the biggest thing, I hadn't mentioned it, is late game, you get to run that Russell Westbrook, Paul George pick and roll. And so, you know, they used to run Russ and KD, KD and Russ, that action. That was tough for teams to guard. Russell gets that back late in the game, which I think is going to help him a lot. You know, I remember, I think last year they tried to run it with Singler a couple times that I remember off the top of my head. It didn't have the same impact. No offense.
I'm horribly offended.
My bad, Kyle.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's offended by that. I think you're good. Do you see them getting off? I mean, I know it's tough to predict this, but like, do you see them getting off to a slow start? I mean, because I feel Russ is just, he's so ball dominant to begin with, and I feel like last season with the 42% usage and the clearly going out of his way to get boards and just him kind of being able to control the offense by doing whatever he wanted to do offensively. I feel like that was, I'm not saying that that's definitively how anyone would develop bad habits. Maybe it's just a thing that you can turn off. And he's so great that I wouldn't at all find it hard to believe that it's a thing you can turn off. But like, wanting the ball in his hands is part of Russell Westbrook's basketball DNA. And if anybody says otherwise, then they're not paying attention to what Russell Westbrook is. Like, Russell Westbrook wants the ball in his hands, and that's fine. But do you see him taking a while just to get out of those habits, or is that something that a player of his caliber can just kind of turn off as soon as a guy like Paul George comes in?
I think, you know, obviously there's going to be an adjustment period. That's not the most exciting talk, but there's going to be an adjustment period where they're trying to figure each other out what's going to be best. The one thing you know about Russell Westbrook is he's going to be Russell Westbrook. And I think the fact that he has the help and he has another option, I think that's going to help him, because I think being able to have that season he had last year, there's not going to be any pressure on him this year. You know, he's not going to have to perform. He's not going to have anything to prove as far as, well, this is my team, any of that stuff that the media likes to bring up. I think it's going to be easier for him because he has Paul George there, because the defense is going to be locked in on something else. He may not have to carry the full load. He may want to, and I'm sure he will at times be Russell Westbrook, but I think it's going to be a lot easier for him to make sure, hey, okay, let me get Paul George the ball. Let me get him a post up, or you know, hey, I'm tired. Let me have him make a play. And so having that help is just going to help him, I don't want to say be more efficient, but be more effective.
Yeah. I mean, I think ideally that's kind of the way to go for it, right? Like having a better player on the floor tends to help other good players.
Oh yeah. And especially in this day and age, you see it. All these players want to play with someone else who can make their games easier. That's just the NBA we live in. Or I shouldn't say everyone. Most players like to find someone else they can make their games a little bit easier. And so, you know, their partnership is going to be interesting to watch. I don't think it's going to be as difficult as some may make it out if they do get off to a slow start. But because, again, you can put George in a variety of different actions, and you can really have him come off a lot of screens. You can run dribble handoffs. You know, there's different things you can put in to maybe get the team going and also get him going. So I like the fact that you have two main threats that are really going to put pressures on defenses that they weren't before.
Right. Well, that's kind of the one thing. I think it's extremely plausible the offense gets off to a slow start, if not probable, that the offense, I feel pretty confident predicting that the offense is going to be better in March than it will be in November. Mm-hmm. Which is true for a lot of teams, but in this one particular, I feel like it could be disproportionately better. The defense, I think, could be what sustains them, though. Like, I don't know if the team itself will get off to such a slow start from a wins and losses perspective, because I think that defense could be really good right out of the gate. Like, part of it is that, like, Paul George doesn't have to guard the opposing team's best wing. Like, that's now Andre Roberson's job. That's why mm-hmm. they're a good fit next to each other. Just Roberson can put all of his energy into defense. Then Paul George can put a lot more of his energy into the offensive side of the ball, more than he was having to do in Indiana. Like, Roberson can do – they kind of tried that in Indiana with C.J. Miles, like, when Paul George was, like – I'm air-quoting this – was, like, playing the four, but wasn't really playing the four because C.J. Miles was guarding the fours. And you know, Paul George was getting credited as playing the four, but it wasn't really playing the four. Like, Roberson is that role, except – I mean, I like C.J. Miles as a player. Don't get me wrong. He's without a doubt a good player. But, like, Andre Roberson is an all-defense caliber defender. I mean, he's mm-hmm. he's a great – he's, you know, a top five, if not better, perimeter defender in the league right now and can guard ones through, like, perimeter-oriented fours. So that's something that is going to be huge for them. And Paul George can put more effort into his defense and – or into his offense, I should say. And maybe because of that, maybe those, like – inconsistent month-to-month splits that we always see from Paul George, maybe they're not as drastic because he can concentrate more on the offensive side of the ball without having to guard, you know, LeBron and then KD and then Kawhi and then whomever else, because that's going to be Roberson's job. And just the way that this defense fits, I mean, it should be, no matter how they decide to scheme it, it should be a cohesive defense, and they have complementary skill sets. Almost no matter, you know, obviously Abrines has work to do and McDermott has work to do and Kanter has work to do, but there are a lot of guys on this team that have the ability to be impact defensive players, and they're long and they're athletic and they can guard multiple positions. I just see the defense being able to carry them early, even if the offense is like a bottom 15 offense at the beginning of the year.
I think the bigger issue offensively is just going to be the half court. They got to make those adjustments running off of each other. But the one thing that helps is having Patterson and his ability to space the floor. That allows you to put Roberson in different places, if that makes sense. You know, I don't know if Coach Donovan's going to do that, but you can maybe put Roberson under the rim, put him around the baseline and pick and roll, kind of move him around so teams can't lock in on him like they have in the past. And so that may be something they may explore. You know, the biggest thing is you kind of mentioned the bench, and it's going to be interesting to see if those guys take the next steps, because obviously, you know, McDermott, Grant, Abrines, they've all shown flashes of what they can do. Can they do it consistently to take this team from where they could be to another level up?
I kind of think Abrines is going to be the guy this year. I don't know where you stand on Abrines. I kind of think Abrines is going to be that guy who's going to make that 20 to 22 minute a game leap this year and be like a real shooting contributor. I just think he can shoot the heck out of the ball. And
I'd agree. I love his ability to shoot. It's going to be interesting to see, can he do it consistently? Because if he can, now you've got some real lineup versatility, some real flexibility where he can be a floor spacer. And maybe if there's a situation where Roberson doesn't have it going, now you still have Paul George who can defend. You don't have to use it all the time. So it's just, you know, some different things they can go ahead and get done. That's a good point there.
Right. And if he can, all Abrines has to be is like a team defender. That's all he's got to be. Like, all he's got to be is that dude who just knows when he's supposed to rotate. And he was not a good defensive player last year. He was, rookies almost never are. He probably will never be a really good defender because he's slender and he's not that strong. And, like, you know, he's just got that small frame and you could probably out-muscle him. But if he can just become a good team defender, then that's fine. With the offense that he can give you, the spacing, the shooting. Like, my like favorite thing is when him and Russ run those 1-2 pick and rolls. Mm-hmm. I get like super excited for the 1-2 pick and rolls because Russ actually passes to Abrines for whatever reason. Out of the pick and rolls, Russ will actually pass to Abrines on those plays. And like Russ really enjoys facilitating out of that for whatever reason. And like those sorts of plays can be super effective because like a two has no idea how the heck to defend on the back end of a pick and roll. And Abrines is going to get open almost every time. And if you give him 5 feet, I mean, he's going to put up that shot every time. So I am really intrigued to see how they're going to use him too. I think he could be in for like a really contributive year this year.
So you're on record, Alex Abrines breakout year. That's done. That's done deal.
I'm already on record of Alex Abrines breakout year.
All right.
I think Alex Abrines I think I'm all in on Alex Abrines. I think Alex Abrines is going to be like, I think he's going to be a really nice player. And I don't know how much of it is on him and how much of it is on the players and how much of it is on Billy Donovan. But like, if you go back and you watch him in Spain, like he was good at running off ball screens and it didn't really happen last year. And I don't know if that's just on him being hesitant as a rookie, him being hesitant because the NBA game is different. You know, the Thunder just not being a team that runs a lot of off-ball screens, if it's on Russ, if it's on other guys, if it's on Billy. Like, I don't know how much blame goes where to where for that. But if they can find a way to run him off screen some more, and he was good at not actually being able to find space, knowing whether he should, you know, cut to the corner or come out, curl out to the wing or whatever it is. Like, he was good at that in Spain. And if that's an element that he can eventually – I mean, he's only 23 still. If that's an element that he can add to his game as he gets older, like he's a valuable player. He's a valuable, like a really, really good bench player on a good team probably. And I'm excited to see what happens to his career. He's a really good shooter, and I think he could be good this year.
Well, if he's not, this soundbite's going to come back to bite you.
Good. I'm wrong like 80% of the time, man.
Oh man, I love it. That's good stuff.
I'm wrong all the time. And you know what? People call me out on Twitter all the time, and I don't care.
Hey, it's better to be bold than hedge everything.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go. Look, I feel like if my hottest take is that, like, the Thunder's eighth man could end up being their sixth man by the end of the year, if that's, like, my hottest, boldest take, then I'm fine with that. Like, I'm good at that.
You're good. Yeah, you can survive that. I wonder if that's the next step in hot takes. If you just make hot takes about things that people don't really think about, is that the safest take to make now? I know I just went off topic, but that might be.
It might be.
Just start making bench predictions.
Yeah. Hey, I'm fine with that. I'm good with that. It's not like I'm predicting all-star season from Alex Abrines. I'm predicting like a good 22 minutes a game from Alex Abrines that helps pretty much every night. That's all I'm asking for. That's all I'm saying is going to happen. I'm good with that.
I'm sure the Thunder will be too.
you got anything to you're good live tweeting games. You should tell the people your Twitter handle.
Steve Jones 20. Steve Jones 20.
All right, Steve Jones 20, and Steve was a coach for a while, video coordinator, Nets, Grizzlies, like good person to follow on Twitter if you like just like the X's nose breakdowns and all that fun stuff, just basically stuff like what we've talked about during this podcast. Steve, thanks for coming on, man.
No problem. Thank you for having me, and hopefully I'll be back in about 6, 7, 8 months.
Yeah. you can remember I'm on. Remember next week, like I said at the top of the show. I'm moving to Tuesdays and Thursdays, so just twice a week for the episodes. You can head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder there, leave a review once you're there. If you have something nice to say, give us 5 stars. If you have questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can send all your hate mail to me on Twitter @FredKatz, FredKatz. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out Thunder Road, follow team coverage, follow other stuff coverage, whatever else. And you can see all that stuff there, normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. That's going to do it for today. Back on Tuesday, not Monday. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.
The new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.